Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everybody. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden here on a Friday here in February. True Straight Up. Brought to you, as always, by
AmericasCitizenPress.com. Great website, one we check out every day. Hey, want to update folks and thank everybody for the kind thoughts. As you can see, Chuck survived the surgery, and everything went well.
It went well, and I'm going with more surgery next Wednesday. So I got some more surgery.
All is going to be okay. Our thanks.
In order to cover up all the holes from the prior surgery, a little plastic surgery for the covering up of the prior surgery. You can never have too much surgery in America these days. It's such a wonderful thing.
And he has to get tested for COVID every 5 minutes.
Yes,
so
yes.
Our thanks, little Mark Griffith, for filling in. Hey, a ton to talk about. We've got Dr. David Bieri standing by. We'll bring him on in a second. Casper Stockham coming on at the bottom of the hour. I mean, there is so much going on. We've got Marjorie Taylor Greene. We've got the New York Times science reporter resigning.
Oh, no.
Oh, I know.
He used racially insensitive words on a trip of students somehow or something.
Years ago that no one cared about
that. Oh, we do now. Punish him.
Exactly. Punish him.
All we can.
That hog guy is starting his own My Pillow company. That's kind of weird.
And then that'll be a big one.
Yeah. And then the whole Times cabal story. I mean, there isn't even a time. Poll, as you'll all be glad to know, he's thinking that maybe in Colorado by next fall.
Or some fall.
Some fall
will be back to something. And we may not even be under emergency, you know, after 5, 6, a dozen years, you know. I mean, how long did the dictatorship of Crassus last? You know, that's will be the same here.
All right.
Here in Colorado.
But let's go ahead and bring in Dr. If you want to go ahead and unmute yourself, Dr. David Bieri. Folks who've listened to our show for a long time are familiar with Dr. Bieri. Chuck loves talking European politics with him. And he's like, okay, we'll talk European politics. I'm like, okay. But first, we need to talk a little bit about what I've been calling Bidenomics.
Well, he's a professor at Virginia Tech University, associate professor of many different international affairs, economic affairs, and the newest comic books.
That's right.
So, Doctor, thank you for your time. I was so glad when I got your email, and we loved it. So now we're going to stalk you and have you on all the time. But thank you.
Well, I'm so glad to actually see you for the first time instead of just hearing you.
It's wonderful
to be on the show.
Thank you. So let me kind of jump in. So in his first, from our point of view, at any rate, week or so in office, Joe Biden has essentially destroyed the economy. First, you know, Obama told us it would never be good. Then Trump came in and it was good. Then we had the pandemic and it was never going to be good again, but it was coming up. And now Biden has...
Dark winter. We're in the dark winter. And he's making it as dark as he can for those construction workers up in North Dakota, down to the oil drillers in South Dakota, to all the many other ones. But at least John Kerry's back and on his jet, and he's making us a better world with his carbon offsets. And
we do have that $1.9 trillion
bailout. Yes, bailout. Just to help folks out. You and me will be getting a lot of that money, undoubtedly.
So your take on what's happening.
Well, my take on this is that politics usually never lets a good crisis go to waste. And Mr. Biden, President Biden, in that sense, is doing what most other politicians would be doing. In terms of the bailout, it's clearly mostly politically motivated. By now, I was sticking my neck out a little bit when I first voiced this close to over a month ago. You know, the numbers weren't actually in yet for what Q4 was going to show. Because one thing that listeners have to realize is that, in economics, we're not in the same boat as we are in biology. When people are coming up with these new COVID vaccines, what they can do is that they can administer the vaccine to some people, but not to other people, and then see what works and what doesn't work. In economics, we can't do that. We can't give treatment to half the population and not to the other half. And so in some ways, We are engaged in some form of Monday morning quarterbacking because we can look to the past to inform the future. The numbers, as you said, are not that bad. The US economy has shown an extraordinary amount of resilience after the big hit that was mostly due to the lockdown, right, to the aggressive interventions. I'm not qualified to speak to the medical necessity, but the one thing that we certainly are seeing in Europe is that people are getting fed up with the lockdown, and it's jeopardizing livelihoods. It's, as always, not affecting the large corporations.
Never does.
And certainly in the US, that's not the case. If you look at the large tech companies that are rolling in dough,
right,
as it were. And so in some ways, what's really questionable from an economics perspective is really what the $1.9 trillion bazooka is supposed to be doing. Given that there is so much political uncertainty in terms of where the money should be going, it's of course also that the, you know, who are you to criticize at this critical moment of national reunification to some, to be the party pooper and say, well, hang on a second, is this needed? And the key really there is that in most instances you can only spend the dollar once.
Yeah.
And so really where the American economy needs it would be in prudent infrastructure investments that benefit all people, from Colorado to Florida to the Pacific Northwest, even up to Alaska. And so prudent infrastructure projects are certainly not part of the $1.9 trillion package. In terms of historical size, you know, a lot of people are saying FDR's New Deal. In the end,
he was quite modest.
Yeah. Although at the time, you know, is a larger portion of overall economic activity. So the New Deal ended up representing roughly about 40% of U.S. economic activity. The Biden package, if it came through, which it won't politically, but if it did come through at $1.9 trillion, would only amount for less than 10%. So it's smaller in that regard, but in absolute terms, it's massive. It's bigger than, as you've hinted at, bigger than the bailout in the global financial crisis. And what I like as a figure, whether you're into infrastructure, a socialization of infrastructure or not, think about this, that the infrastructure that was built in, put in the interstate highway system could be rebuilt with that money four times over. So you could build 46,000 miles in highway infrastructure four times with that amount.
But could you, how many years of vacation for school teachers can you buy? And that's the key. That's what we really want. They haven't had to work for several years. And a lot of them can retire if we can keep this up for another decade or so.
Absolutely. And really, honestly, I mean, here is where I would say from a political economy perspective, too, in terms of where I see there is no questions about who the true real heroes are of this crisis, the frontline workers and so forth.
The podcasters.
That's it.
Absolutely.
You really think the frontline workers are the heroes, right? Who are
Chuck,
they?
I think, yes, to some extent, but I also see it. I see it as people who work in local government, people who are capable.
Oh, yeah. You know how many friends I have in local government? You know how much good time they're having? They're down in Puerto Rico. This is the biggest joke ever.
I tell you, I mean, the people in local school districts who are having to make ends meet and
what?
No, wait. And this I will agree with you. We had, in fact, our parent, not the teachers' unions, our son goes to a charter school, and we had a parent-teacher conference with our fourth graders. But let me say, I think on that, though, you're right. There are individual teachers. When all was said and done, our son has not only, through all the remote learning, has not lost ground, he actually gained some ground. And I think,
but all the other kids in this class have. They've taken a year off. And inner city schools, what are they doing to those kids? Oh, yeah, they're reading up to a first grade level in high school.
I'm not advocating very carefully. I'm not advocating for overpaid teachers and the problem of tenures, the fact that you can't fire them, the fact that they can retire on full benefits, et cetera, when nobody else can. What I'm saying, if the question is whether you should rely for local conditions on local governments or the federal government, the answer clearly is it's local governments.
Right.
Because the federal government has at the as far as local conditions are concerned, absolutely A, no instruments, and B, no intel on what's going on. And in that sense, I can say I'm privileged to live in rural Southwest Virginia, where things, thankfully, due to people with a lot of common sense, have actually worked out okay-ish. Now, I wouldn't at this point want to live in a large metro area where the political machinery is so broken, of course, that you have all sorts of other hairy problems to deal with. But the one thing that in some ways worries me the most about to come back to bring it back to the Biden deal is if you look at where they're planning to spend the money, it's in all of these, it's, you know, we all have good intentions.
No, we don't. They don't.
Democrats don't.
Democrats don't.
I give them that. I can deal with them even if I give them that benefit of the doubt. But it as we would say in German, no goat will lick away the fact that this is lousy economics, despite the fact that so many high-profiled people were writing for people who have won more accolades than I ever will and who arrived for very influential papers in the Northeast, will say, well, this is all very welcome. In their heart of hearts, they know that this is crappy economics and it's throwing good money after bad, because there is no way that half a trillion dollars that they have earmarked for, you know, the accelerated vaccination, this, that, and the other. All we have to do is look at the lousy record in terms of how Medicare and Medicaid are run, where one in five claims is fraudulent. And so if you really want to feed the dark underbelly of corruption and so forth, this is the way to do it.
This is a Hunter Biden budget. This is a kind for drugs, strippers, everything else. We followed in our newspaper, we followed the last Democratic stimulus one, which was Obama's. And we really went down and looked, where did all the money go to? It was all political. Mm-hmm. It was all local unions, local arts groups. Every Democratic feed monster was on it. This, and it will be $1.9 trillion. It will not be cut down.
Not to bring up yet another, and of course, you know, I'm for the views on this program, I'm trying to be as secular as I can, but there are lots of large institutions that have connections to a country south of Switzerland who has once ruled the world, seemingly. You know, the Catholic Church has amassed tremendous amounts of the Catholic dioceses up and down the country have benefited tremendously from bailout money. Whether that's good or bad, whether they need it or not, is not for me. I'm not the judge of this. But the point is this: the federal government for all of these big sort of fire hose programs, this is not the way to do it. We've seen it in Europe. It's caused similar programs have just created fraud. In Germany, some of the largest beneficiaries were Arab clans who just set up these entities that could claim startup credits and this, that, and the other. So that's certainly not the way to go.
We saw that in Colorado. I mean, in fact, the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle, the lead story this month, is talking about the unemployment fraud. Something like 40% of the claims that were being processed were fraudulent. And fraud,
but some of the good ones are out of Liberia. Those guys are really good at it.
It's gangs. It's organized. Let me ask you kind of on a specific economic note. In Colorado, and for instance, oil and gas industry is huge here, which is now gone. You know, they talk about, well, these people will be able to get solar jobs or things. To me, this seems like it's just a bailout for some of their, to fund their private things. But I mean, there are thousands of jobs at that. I mean, to me, it just seems like it's disastrous. You know, they had a thing where they raised the minimum wage for grocery store employees in California by $4. So the grocery stores all closed, right? I mean, for if you're a small business or if you're just a person, say, working in an oil field, you're screwed, I think, under this Biden economy.
In many ways, you are. And it's early days. And they can always have nice afterthoughts. But the main message this is that the thing that should worry you is that they come up with such a large budget for which they have such few details on how to implement it. And that to me doesn't sound like prudent. And by the way, you know, Milton Friedman never was really. He's often misread as having said that there should be no government intervention. His main conviction as to why government should be kept relatively small is precisely this, because government inevitably will be captured by some political interests, one way or the other. And in order to minimize the impact of that, is you need to keep government small, not because it's inherently bad. I mean, that's certainly my position. I'm still deluding myself that there could be such a thing as a prudently governed republic. But given
Do you have
that,
an example of one?
He said he was being optimistic.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Well, I would always, but this doesn't work in America so much. But I would always say, well, Switzerland isn't, but it's also going the inevitably. Currently, I wouldn't find a good example on the planet, except I would say, this republic. But the one thing that worries me I'm a resident alien, I guess, who's being taxed without representation, which I don't mind for the privilege of everything that this country affords me, by the way, has afforded me a career, is affording me, for now, the freedom to think and do what I can. But in the academy, it's getting more and more difficult to do that. And that's a massive problem. But I think, Judy, you mentioned before, if we look at taxation and welfare recipients, one of the key problems that America has, more than any other industrialized nation, it's that it's a country of two halves, because close to 40% of Americans don't pay income taxes.
Right.
And so in that sense, we have the issue that politics of the Democratic variety in the last, shall we say, 30 years have created a part of a society that becomes reliant on government handouts.
Well, the two people who don't pay taxes in this country, the very poor and the very rich.
Yes.
And
it's not good for either of them.
Rich are pretty happy these days, and I don't know about the poor. They're probably not, but they'll be kept in their subservient place by government handouts.
You know, you can always tell a recent immigrant by his fervor for old ideas. But I do think, Jefferson was absolutely right. In that sense, America lives on the idea that we are part of a continuum of republics, as he said. So we have to remain engaged locally at the state level and at the federal level. But most people, because of whatever reason, they're completely checking out at the federal level. They're happy to get, where does this guy teach? He teaches at Vartec, indeed.
Yes. Virginia Tech.
Virginia's true land-grant university, established in 1872 due to the Morrill Act. But so I do think in that sense, one thing that big, large government risks is that people no longer feel part of the fabric. They just get a check. That's the only thing that they want. People get sort of, essentially the country relies on, as one of the listeners or viewers is saying, on the middle class. Because you can tax them, you can hurl all sorts of abuse at them, and you can always rely on their loyalty and their willingness to have the Pledge of Allegiance. And I think that's not a good place to be.
Well, it's amazing that, I spent a little time in various European countries, never Switzerland, so I guess there's isn't. But the incredible cynicism of the government and what it's about, and the hatred for the various forms of their government, viewing them all as utterly amoral and corrupt. Uh-huh. That didn't exist in the United States. Most people are pretty optimistic about the country, but I have to say today, it's getting much more European. Most people figure this $1.9 trillion is just a
not gonna come
political
to
payoff to insiders, all corrupt. Yet you have a president who is senile, but his son apparently is very competent.
He's getting a book now coming out.
But he's got a new book coming out about all the drugs he's taken. The cynicism that was in Europe has now come here. They look at their local government as corrupt and dishonest.
That in some ways worries me, but in comparison, because I'm still very much tied in. I have parents who live in Switzerland, and I think in that regard, in Europe, we're still ahead of America. You know, governments are now deciding that, for instance, it's not worth to vaccinate people above a certain age because guess what?
They're going to die anyway.
They're going to die anyway. And so I think the crisis has actually demonstrated in some ways, for all, of course, you know, all of these sentiments are quite relative. And so you can say that in America, the momentum has picked up. But I'm still quietly optimistic that once people are coming back to their senses again a little bit and feel not so offended all the time and are beginning to see parallels in history. For instance, I just wanted to bring one thing up that's been troubling me tremendously, which is, you know, the absolutely unspeakable events that happened at the Capitol a few weeks
ago. What unspeakable events? As opposed to the ones that are happening down in Portland and everywhere else.
Well, there you are. I wanted to draw you out in precisely in that regard. One thing of all the conspiracy theories that people have not contemplated is this, that if you look at the history of totalitarian regimes and such, one of the first things that
the Reichstag fire. Get a Reichstag fire. That's what it was.
But how many people were sort of saying, well, hang on a second, isn't it a little strange that this was so easy to pin on some people? Shouldn't it make you a little suspicious that in the aftermath of this, in the immediate aftermath of this, there were politicians that I cannot name on this program that immediately said, so therefore we should put a muzzle on the press.
But for as long as
people are not willing to see or to entertain alternative possibilities, we are truly screwed. And what I'm trying to do, at least from the trenches, is occasionally show, educate my students or give them the possibility to think in alternative patterns.
Is that allowed anymore? Is that legal anymore?
You have to do it gently. But I do believe, I mean, Oscar Wilde said, you may think of him what you like. His sexual preferences are neither here or there for me to comment on. But he did say this. A good university education is one that allows you to engage with different ideas gracefully. And this is what's currently no longer possible.
You're right, in the public realm.
Well, it's only one way. I guess I would say
It's only one way.
And that is, let me, on a just a completely, because we only have a few more minutes with you.
Oh, yeah, we had a couple hours.
On something completely different, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I had a friend send me an article. At first I thought it was a joke, but it's not. So the governor of Nevada is proposing that we set up business areas for giant tech companies, you know, like Amazon, the ones that have the giant platforms, and allow them their own separate government parties, like a county. They could tax people. They could have schools. They would have court systems.
Company stores.
And I said immediately they'd build like little robot armies to take over the rest of us. But any thought to me, I'm just looking at that. I'm like, I can't think of an incredibly stupid or economic idea to like good give economic. Amazon. Yeah. It's like, okay, here you can set up your own government inside our
state.
Well,
that's what I used to do in coal country. Yeah, they used to do that.
Well, exactly.
Does that exist anywhere?
Well, the answer is, of course, yes. In a lot of the in Africa, a lot of the mining towns, and by the way, even in the United States, I mean, corporate towns up in New York with Kodak Eastman, even in West Virginia, that you had they issued their own form of money, scrip. The larger story to this is. Of course, be very careful what you wish for in the smoke tax chasing game that is a local economic development. Because what's happening is, and of course, listeners or viewers, I should say, have seen the stories develop, is California's problem of a mass exodus of tech companies. Why? Because California is overregulating things and people are saying, well, we're voting with our feet. Goodbye, California. We're going to where we get, guess what? Not more business opportunities, but larger subsidies. And that's the other big myth in terms of, you know, the big successes of Rocket Man, not the one from North Korea, the other one, Elon Musk. He's brilliant, but he's equally brilliant at collecting government subsidies at the state level. Look, when my own dear employer, Virginia Tech, essentially pulled off that coup of getting the Amazon HQ2, we were involved in getting the HQ2 when everybody thought it was going to be New York. No, they came to Greater DC. We have a massive innovation campus. You should see some of the small print that we're, as the Commonwealth of Virginia, is guaranteeing to Amazon. So in that sense, of course, these companies are saying, you know, give us whatever you have.
We already
we'll
have
just
it.
Go to, we just go to the lowest bidder. Or the highest bidder in that sense, or the where the costs are lowest to us. Right. And I do think in that sense, and you know, normal people, I would say, people who listen to your program, they have figured this out. Something cannot be right. And it annoys them. And in that sense, you know, it's strangely enough, it's largely democratically governed states. It's largely democratically governed large metro areas, which engage in these seemingly market-based economic development schemes. And right. all they benefit is they essentially transfer taxpayers' money to large corporations.
Who then donate to the politicians to get them in office so they can keep that little revolving door of money
and,
going.
And what's even better, and what's even better and more sinister, is now come forward in such generous ways and say, let us donate.
Yes,
you know, $100 billion to this, that, and the other. When they have collected, when they have collected billions of dollars in economic development tax subsidies, well, what can I say?
Well, yeah. even the Chicago mobsters used to do some soup kitchens and stuff to get
Oh well, absolutely. It's of course it's an old trick. And speaking of Chicago, of course, Chicago has pioneered in many ways these local economic development schemes. They call tax increment finance programs.
Yes.
And you, in fact, you have them in Denver as well.
Right.
And some of the same shenanigans in terms of. Unelected official, Julie, to get back to your original question in terms of why should we worry? We should worry because what of democratically elected officials to that you can vote in and out of office?
Right.
With these quangos, as they're called in Britain, quasi-governmental entities, you have no accountability.
Right.
No.
You can't fire them. They're all appointed official, at least at the federal level. They used to have such things as the unelected officials would have to appear in front of Congress and give testimony. In the case of the Fed, you know, you had the famous Humphrey Hawkins testimonies that no longer exist. But at least in a democracy, you cannot continue to rely increasingly, even at the local level, on these on these unelected officials that answer to corporate interests.
Right.
Well, let me ask you, since you do international studies, and you're the only few people I get to talk to about these kind of things, but I want to talk about a republic that does always work. It always makes the trains run on time, Italy. And its present things.
They make good wine.
Giuseppe Conte, his government has failed. And now we've got Mario Draghi, who used to be a central bank bureaucrat. To form a technocrat government. What do you think? How do you think that's going to do?
Well, to the viewers, I think what they will take great pleasure from hearing is that Mario Draghi, Dr. Draghi, I should say, got his PhD from the MIT.
And well, there you go. Thank God.
So he's American trained. He's an American trained technocrat who certainly has written a very short dissertation in 1978, I think, of only 130 pages. Of you know the intellectual content we don't want to debate in this program, but he is certainly look. He also worked for Goldman Sachs, so he knows how to play.
This is what
the large outcry was when he succeeded Monsieur Trichet. That you get an Italian investment banker who earned his spores in London now. He knew how to mismanage taxpayers' money when he was in Frankfurt, when he ran the ECB. And so I'm sure he'll do a fine job in Rome. And I mean, one thing he certainly is, he's smooth and well-connected.
And
he's also well-respected throughout the EU.
More important that he's popular in Belgium.
If anything, you know, the EU is now demonstrating, of course, how not to run government, and Frau von der Leyen has to apologize that, you know, the whole vaccination distribution debacle, and that they're held over a barrel by these punitive contracts with corporations. It doesn't really bode well, and so in that sense, I'm pleased to say that I'm a European of Swiss origin, British educated, living in the United States. I have very little in common with the nonsense that we're seeing that's currently coming out of Europe. Italy is consistent in that sense. Yes, they make fantastic wine. They are capable of building bridges at a pace. Remember the case in Genoa where the bridge collapsed because of certain things, and they built a fantastic new bridge that hopefully will last a little longer, that their German brethren are really very envious of, because they can't get an airport together. The Berlin airport has been is a project that lasted about 20 years or more. In that sense, which government is it for Italy? It's now the 66th post-war government, or some ridiculous number like this. Yeah. The only thing, what did Hyman Minsky say? Stability breeds instability, and so I think in that case it will not apply to Italy. They remain in a state of instability that makes them quite stable in some strange way. Well, because they're used to it. They're simply used to it. The people are not expecting anything else.
There you go.
Well, Doctor, we're going to have to let you go. Thank you.
Oh, it's been great to talk to you again. Just a pure
absolutely.
Joy.
Absolutely.
Just a pure joy.
My pleasure.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Have you back.
We will
Thanks
have you
much.
Back for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you. That's
thank
Dr.
you. Thank
Dr.
You.
David Bieri there. We were so pleased when he reached out to us, because Chuck loves to talk European politics. And I knew you were going to get some in there too.
I had to get a little, just a little fix, you know.
And I
can talk to Julie about a lot, but European politics,
that's
not
right,
so much.
That's right. Someday I'll tell our two-state solution story, but not now, because I think I saw Casper Stockham up there somewhere. Casper, if you're on in the Zoom thing, go ahead and turn your camera on and unmute yourself. But I did want to touch base on that. I mean, that wasn't a joke I was talking about. That's seriously something that the governor of Nebraska is proposing, that they just let the tech companies form their own governments within our states.
And then they can take over the states and then
like
take
I said,
over the whole
yeah,
thing.
I mean, hello, did anybody, am I the only person in America who saw Terminator? I mean, any of them? It does not go well when you let tech companies take over. Hey, so we've got Casper Stockham with, you know, Casper, I'll let you just introduce yourself and your organization. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I love your backdrop.
Yeah,
you guys are
cool.
Pretty snazzy there. Yeah.
Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Awesome. Awesome. So my name is Casper Stockham. I'm the executive director for America First Republicans. And I have some interesting news for your audience today.
Okay, let us have it.
All right. Well, here we go. I have not been all that impressed with the current field of candidates running for Colorado State GOP chair. So I have decided with a lot of support and prayer and everything else to throw my hat into the ring for state chair of Colorado GOP.
Congratulations on that.
I have to say, you can't stop running.
It's like,
for very long.
Are you ready for the pain? I mean, do you have some bodyguards? Something? That's bad.
Yeah, I think Scott Gessler's going to be nice about that. And more Andy George and Clear Creek Strategies.
You know, Casper, you just do a great job, I think, of jumping, seeing where there is a need and saying, okay, look, I'm not, like you said, I haven't been overly impressed. I know we've talked to, how do I say it? There are people in there who probably would not have been our favorites either. But let me ask you, maybe just explain to folks, where do you differ and how are you different from the candidates that we've already seen in there?
Absolutely. So, you know, I was going to stay out of this completely altogether. In fact, if Trump had launched a third party, I may have been considering moving in that direction. But at the end of the day, Trump has pretty much said, no, he's not going to do a third party. So we don't have any choice but to work within the current structure we have, which means that we have to build back better. I hate to use those terms, but that's exactly what we need to do is build the GOP. But we need to build it in a way that is inclusive to all of the folks in Colorado, not just the elite, you know, not just the special folks. It needs to be accessible and available to every Coloradan. And that's what I'm excited to do. And in the current field, you know, all those folks I like, you know, they're friends of mine, if you will. But at the end of the day, I didn't see any excitement level happening. I don't see the base rallying around either one or two of the candidates and saying, you know, this is our person. So somebody needs to step in. We need to have more of a conversation about everything. And right now, I don't see that happening. So that's why I'm throwing my hat
into it. Do you, on a deeper basis, understand what the Colorado Republican Party does these days?
That's a cynical question.
No, honestly. I mean, because I really wanted to find out. So I found out. And the chairman does one thing. He takes the money in from the RNC, which is a couple million bucks, gets some money from Anschutz and a few other people. You enrich all the consultants, and you pay yourself and some other people a lot of money. You really don't do anything else other than that. You've run for Congress. You know how helpful. You know how much. They don't help anybody. All they do is divide up the RNC money among themselves.
So saying,
can we be on your gravy train?
So you're saying you would try to have a different approach than just taking the money and paying it to your little lobby consultant friends?
And yourself, you know, a nice salary and everything else. And, you know.
Do you have a different vision?
And make sure that Butterball gets her salary because she's always on the hook for it. And XL or RX or whatever his name is.
It's going to be a night and day difference. Figuratively and literally night and day, because what the GOP chair and assistant is doing right now is not working, obviously.
They don't do anything.
Well,
exactly. So my point is we are going to do a lot. We are going to we're going to do a lot, you know.
Well, Phil won't give you any money. Well, you'll get the RNC money, I guess.
That's okay, Chuck, because there are a lot of people that are, again, unhappy with the current structure. So all we need is for the grassroots, and there's more of us than there are them.
Yeah,
they don't need to, you know, empty out their savings accounts. All we need is for them to do is 10 to 20 bucks a month or something, and we would have enough funds to do all the things we need to do to take our state back.
No, I think, you know, there are people saying, yay, go Casper, go. Mark Griffith is saying, hey, would you consult with George Anthonisopoulos?
I reached out to George, and I hope he returns my phone call. You know, I guess he's kind of busy these days.
He's got a job.
He's got a dog. He's got a job.
He's got a job. He's got kids. Well, you know, one of the things, let me ask you this, because it is going to be very difficult. I mean, because for folks who don't understand, we don't, well, the regular, not all voters vote for this. The people who vote are people largely, they're grassroots people.
No, they're not. They're
central committee. Let me finish. But there are a lot of people who are establishments. So to get elected.
It's called the SEC, the State Central Committee, and it's composed of elected officials.
I know the players, and I know that they are not going to be happy, but at the end of the day, we have to do something.
Right.
We have to step up and you know, some adults need to step into the room. There's a lot going on in our state, and you know, from the voting systems to you know, to the way that they ignore the grassroots candidates, all those things need to change. And right, I don't see any of the current candidates speaking to those issues. So I am now giving voice to the voiceless. I'm giving voice to the people who have been ignored by the state party, by the system, whatever you want to call it, and we're going to make a change. There's a lot of things that I want to roll out. I don't have the time to roll them out now, but within the next few days, it's going to be very evident that the plan that needs to happen to save our state and eventually save our nation.
Well, just a couple more questions for you. Let me segue into talking about your group, because I think what you're trying to do there is brilliant. It's what the Democrats do with their Emerge program. They find candidates, they train them, they help them, they provide them an internal support system. Republicans have nothing like that. Right. But that's the kind of thing that you're trying to do with your group. Why don't you tell, because here's the thing I think we need. We need people like you who say, I'll run. We need people who say, I'll help. I'll knock on doors, I'll support. Well,
what happened to your group? Your
group is going to grow tremendously. In fact, we had a goal of 5 candidates identified in a year. We have been in operation for 45 days. We already have 3 candidates identified.
Wow.
We have another full class starting up next week. Next week, we have another full class starting up of candidates. That's not our problem. Our problem is we don't have leadership that understands what the problem is so we can fix it.
Right. No. Well, Casper, where can people, if they want to help, because I know we've already seen people do, where should they go? And please, final thing, keep us in touch too, because we're happy to help you as you roll out some of these ideas.
When is the election for the chair?
It's pretty quick, isn't it?
I believe it's in March. Yeah. I don't have
the exact date, or
I don't have it right now.
Okay. All right. So where can people find out and where can people help?
Yes. So for the state championship race, they can go to CasperForColorado.com. CasperForColorado.com. I do need some donations, but I already have some donations already in place. I have some major support and endorsements already. One, Jerry Natividad is completely on board with the campaign as far as donations and support. Greg Lopez and a lot of the folks literally been ignored by the establishment are coming on board. Since we've been on this interview, my phone has been ringing off the hook.
All right. Hey, we've got Ben is telling us the election is the 27th. So March 27th.
All right.
Well, Casper, thank you. You know, let us, how do I say it before? I don't want to just like live endorse people here and there on the air,
welcome you in the field.
Yeah. We really need somebody like you out there. So thank you for doing that. And again, your background looks great.
Yeah. Good background. So.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Casper. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Casper.
Thank you for announcing on our show.
I mean, thank you. Yeah, that's cool. And we do need people like Casper because it is, I mean, what do they say? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. We've had the same leadership in the Republican Party. And every year, I mean, it can't actually get any worse.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. How? I mean, we don't get anyone elected.
Oh, you know, there are a few minor positions.
Yeah.
You know, there's some people get elected in state Senate seats and stuff.
Yeah.
We'll start losing all those, too.
Right. So, you know, it is certainly.
But we got to get more money for Andy George. What about him?
Well, and this is from Leo, which is true. You're going to have to focus on everything from dog catcher, city council, everywhere to state legislature. Forget U.S. Senate. I agree with that. It all starts local.
Well, why bother with U.S. Senate? Have you seen his running? I mean, I think there was
somebody. Ken Buck is like, I'm not going to run.
He's not going to run. Are you kidding me? We can't win an election statewide. They've rigged it.
No, Chuck, so, it isn't rigged. Election
oh, that's right. Totally Scott Gessler square. Apparently has now figured out that there may be some voting problems. He's given a email to a good friend. He said he's now wasn't concerned before, but now he's discovered.
Nobody's looked at it.
Wow,
having brilliant. Absolutely no.
Of course, he ran the Republican Party when it went down the drain. So get him reelected.
Want to talk about, and we can open it up, guys, for phone calls, 888-627-6008. Or if you're on Zoom and you want to chime in, go ahead and unmute yourself just one at a time. Another thing I wanted to talk about, people are calling Chuck.
Calling me. So much right. They want to give money to Casper.
They want to give Casper. I want to talk about the Marjorie Taylor Greene. We talked about that on our last show. I think two things on this. One, I had not followed her before, so I don't really know much of what she did or didn't say. Seems to me, though, they had to go pretty far back. And it seems to me it's nothing compared to some of the things that the Democrats have said.
It isn't.
And that's all fine.
I mean, sometimes she would do these rambling things. You say, I don't know. I just read. So, you know, there you are.
And here's.
And then she mentioned to mention in an article the Rothschild Bank. They said, that's an anti-Semitic trope.
Oh, yeah.
And that means you're anti-Jewish and you're anti-Semitic, unlike Ilhan Omar.
Who's just flat out anti-Semitic.
Yeah, she just wants to kill every Jewish person.
What I like about her, though, so what do they do? And there's a couple of dangerous things here that we need to pay attention to. Mm. So what do? They go ahead and they strip her from the Democrats from her committee assignments. And what does she do? She tweets out, thank you. You have made me stronger than ever. I had some lame committee assignment where Republicans have no power.
Well,
now I get to
you have
to
understand, have you ever been down a legislature and been in a minority in both houses and all that? You have no power. You sit in committee meetings and they tell you to shut up.
Right.
I mean, you can pretend you're important by giving them, you know, like they do up at the state capitol.
I mean, how many of us heard of Marjorie Taylor Greene before this or Greene, whatever? No, nobody.
She says, hey, this is great. I have a lot of time now rather than being a nothing on a committee.
Here's what really makes me angry about that. Who the heck are the Democrats to tell the people of her state, of her district, who they can and can't vote for?
You think they care about that?
Well, no, they don't. And that's what should alarm all of us, guys, is that the Democrats are now saying, if we don't like the people that you send to Washington, D.C., we're just going to eliminate them.
Well, that's the Republicans, too.
Republicans trying to.
What did Mitch McConnell do to the nominee for Senator of Alabama?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he said, no, you can't come up here.
Well, at least he destroyed him, you know, before the vote.
Well, then they lost. But then they lost. Well, he got, no. They destroyed him so that the Democrat came in. Now they got a Republican.
They're not stopping there. I mean, keep that in mind, right? You look at all the targets on Lauren Boebert's back.
Oh, did you? I know you guys probably don't, but if you go to Colorado Polls, and that's just POLS, run by a mysterious one called
Jason Sossman?
No, it's Jason. And Jason said, that's not me. It's not me. It's a different Jason. And he asked, who's the other Jason? That's easy to find out. Well, tell us, Jason. He goes, no. So anyway, the scum over at Colorado, and they are scum. Every article is on Lauren Boebert. Every article.
And why is that?
And even before, it was vaguely interesting to read Colorado Polls. But now it's kind of like, Lord. And then, of course, the Denver Post. We've had three experts look into her mileage records, and we don't like her mileage records. And so,
we don't look at Jason Crowe's. We don't look at Ed Perlbutter's. We don't look at Diana DeGette's.
As a post, they're very responsible. Right, right. Colorado Polls,
it's just ridiculous. So they are attacking her.
So maybe Jason can run out of one of his fraudulent charity schemes where they have a contest that nobody wins. Yay, Jason, go for it. Whatever Jason is, I'm not sure it's the Jason of Colorado Polls or Jason Sossman.
But the bigger danger, though, to me that I wanted to talk about there is the fact that the Democrats now are voting to strip the other part. Because the way it works is Republicans put their people who have no power right now anyway on the committee. And the Democrats have said, no, we're going to vote you off. No, we're not going to vote off AOC, who's totally, I was nearly killed at the Capitol. Okay, well, I wasn't
Capitol. That's her truth.
That's her truth.
If she believed it was true, it must be true.
She doesn't think it's true. She just wants to say it.
Oh, yes, she does. Wait a minute. Don Lemon said, got together Chris Cuomo. You can believe those two guys, Chris and his brother. You know, they didn't come any better than that.
It's her truth.
It's their truth. And if she believes she was under attack, then she was under attack.
Even though there was no one there to attack
her. But that's your view. For her view, they were there. They were waiting.
She didn't even know, right? I mean,
you're so technical. You're so technical.
And then she was such this, okay, maybe that actually didn't happen either, but it could have. And that's my truth. But again, so the Democrats are, and the big tech companies are not even pretending anymore. That Times, if you haven't seen it, check out the New York Times. They write They write it as if this is a good thing, right? Yeah. That thank God
we have this. Save democracy.
This secret cabal of giant businesses.
Changing all the state laws.
Changing the state laws, getting the mainstream media, pressuring them to go along, pressuring sponsors and people like that to drop and try to silence conservative voices.
They helped rig the election. Yay!
They fortified the election.
That's another word. Look up rigged. It says synonyms. Fortify.
I know there was somebody was tweeting, I'm fortifying my betting odds by counting the cards. You know, it's just, but I mean, they admit it and they acknowledge it. And we were talking about this because I was saying to Chuck, really, hasn't that been going on in politics forever? And you said not where
unions get together with the Chamber of Commerce, who get together with all the means of the media.
Usually those two don't get along.
No, there's usually an opposite side.
Unions and chamber.
Yeah. No, it's never. In 1896 election, yes, all of the money, the big boys, the robber barons went for McKinley. But there are plenty of other people who did not hear. And you have to say, I must say, the Republicans just kind of, this is Blueprint Colorado taken to the national level. That's exactly what that's what Fred and the guys were doing. Ted. Why don't the Republicans ever do?
Well, and
like
it was
this?
Lawfare was deeply involved in this. If you don't know, that's it's a massive think tank, propaganda tank, tank.
DOJ people,
right? And it's all progressive Democrats.
And crooked as you can get.
And so the fact that they're, and the New York Times is saying this is a good thing, and all the Democrats, well, it is a good thing. It kept them in power. But it is alarming, and we need to.
If you weren't alarmed before, then you should be.
The Marjorie Taylor Greene thing is another example. The Democrats are now saying, "Hey, look, if we don't like who you vote, I mean, so we can't rig every election, or we can't fortify.
Yes, they can.
We can't.
Yes,
well, they can. They didn't get around to it. We didn't get around to fortifying every election last time. So once you send them here, we're just going to strip them of all power, and we're going to harass them and threaten them and humiliate them and do everything everything and anything we can to destroy them, not just get them unelected, but destroy them. Keeping in mind that Marjorie Taylor Greene got as much as high a percentage of the vote in her district as Nancy Pelosi got in hers. Nancy Pelosi, like, oh, she's never said anything inflammatory.
She's perfect. She's wonderful. Mark says, so what happens with impeachment next week? The last change to destroy Trump. No, they have lots of other ones. Don't worry.
They're never gonna stop. Yeah. I think what Trump's team said, Mark, is he's not gonna testify because it's an unconstitutional hearing. What I hope they do is they just keep when you're a reporter, let me back up a second. Sometimes you would interview people who are very skilled at handling the media, and you would ask them a question, not like Mike Coffman, where you just keep saying the same stupid answer over and over again, but you would just give whatever answer you want to be. That's a good question, Chuck. Yeah. And then you would go off on whatever point you want to make. I hope they do that. I hope that they just use it, no matter what the Democrats ask them, it's all going to be them giving speeches. Yeah. We've seen the wimpy caving of the Republicans and Kevin McCarthy. I mean, on the one hand, he goes and talks to Trump. On the other hand, he makes sure that Liz Cheney doesn't get ousted.
Wasn't that enthralling everybody when he said, well, at least they'll get rid of Liz Cheney? They only get 65 votes, 160 plus vote to keep
Liz
Cheney.
They do not want to give up their power. They will do.
Give up their power. They don't want to do anything. They just want to be servile. They're just pathetic.
We've talked about this.
But Trump, there's some hope. I hope Trump's working right now on a platform and getting, Trump TV, Trump Facebook, Trump everything else. He's good at doing those things.
Well, we had Jen Kearns on the show, who's a political analyst, political commentator, and she said she is hearing that Laura Trump may want to run for something, Ivanka Trump may want to run
for
something.
We don't need Ivanka Trump.
Chuck is on it, but here's what I say. If Trump knows what they're up against, and if Trump is going to start fielding primary candidates and supporting primary candidates.
Well, he doesn't really know, because he really should have been a lot more. Somebody should have been, while they're stealing this election. Should have been on it before.
Oh, okay. This is from Leo. Thank you, Leo. I identify as a congresswoman who has almost kind of maybe attacked at the Capitol. I deserve federal agents protecting me and other reparations. And then Ben is like, Trump should ask for a continuance. I don't think they'll give him one. Oh, speaking of that, Leo, this was kind of funny. Well, maybe it's not funny. Maybe it's depressing. You guys can tell me.
Well, here's a good one. This is from Sandra. To everyone, right? We're gonna believe Jason Salson. Yep.
Sure. Anyway, so on the whole identifying, so our son Rev is playing this game. It's called Fortnite. No, it's Roblox, actually, where you can be characters and you can, arm yourself with various things. That's Grand Theft Auto. Oh. So Rev is talking, they have their mic on, they talk to the other kids they're playing with.
The other kids being a 42-year-old pedophile in Texas.
No, these are kids. He said, I identify as an attack helicopter. And he had like a little attack helicopter on his head. And he said, I don't have a gender. My gender is attack helicopter. That's how I identify. And I didn't even know whether to laugh or cry. I mean, he's identifying as an attack helicopter.
That's right.
And he was doing it in a sarcastic tone at nine. At nine, he understands how incredibly stupid it is. So he's identifying as attack helicopter. I don't know. Okay, Leo says good for him. I wasn't sure whether we need him to be deprogrammed after that. Ben is saying this is a good point. Back to the impeachment, that was an aside. They can't do anything while they're in the impeachment proceedings. That is true, Ben. Ben, I'm sorry, they don't need to do anything. Joe Biden is, taking Jared Polis's God complex to like the nth degree. And he's
very close to meeting God, or at least somebody in the heavens.
He's just signing executive order after executive order. We don't need no stinking Congress. They can hold their stupid hearings.
He's actually read any of those. What's this one do?
Oh, well, no, it's clear he hasn't read any of them.
Oh, there's Ben. Let's talk to Ben. We only got a couple minutes left, Ben.
Yeah. Well, my point is that he should continue. It looks like it's going to get to the end of the impeachment. He should ask for the continuous so they can't do anything. He can drag this thing out forever.
And they'd be happy to do that, too. Yeah. I think they'd be happy to do that, too.
For sure.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Bye-bye. Ben. Thanks, Ben. Okay. And thank you, Sandra, for reassuring me. I like your son's imagination. It's called being a kid. That's true. That's true. Although it's interesting that even at nine, he got the subtle the nuances of, you know, identifying as something.
Yeah, and he's not big on nuance in a lot of
things. Hey, we want to, that's going to wrap it up for us today. Thank you to all the kind wishes for Chuck. As you can see, he's fine.
I'm still here, and I'll be more surgery next week.
More surgery next week. Thank you to our sponsors, AmericasCitizenPress.com, Julie McCallan at Cenogenics. Want to thank Dr. Bieri, Casper Stockham, everybody for chiming in on Zoom. We love it when you guys do that. Remember, you can get everything you need to get at ChuckandJulie.com. I'm working on, was going to do a newsletter.
Groceries.
Not groceries, right. Everything you need to know. Yeah. All of our podcasts, YouTube. YouTube, every so often I'll get people just real quick saying, hey, your podcast is not there. Periodically, YouTube just pulls it. They say they don't tell us why.
We are insurrectionists.
They just say, exactly. They just say we've removed it from the universe, essentially. Yes,
you mentioned Trump somewhere in your broadcast.
I have no idea what the rhyme or reason is behind some of it. They don't do it very often, but if not, and you can always get hold of me, feel free to pop me an email on our website.
We'll send you our own version.
Yeah, exactly. We can do that. And so I can put up a link there. Thank you to the great guys, Thomas and everybody at BBS. Chuck is off to
The ballet, Boy Scouts at the ballet, and I need it after the operation.
Everybody, thank you. Have a wonderful weekend.
Bye-bye, everybody.
We'll see you Monday.